श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय, श्री गौर आदमा की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर सो Good evening to all, welcome again back. And today and tomorrow we will be having evening Q&A, as we announced among ourselves. I'm not streaming the lectures, although I will be sharing eventually, but the idea is to keep our particular group here and address any questions you may have or any topics you may like to hear about, whether in connection to what we have been speaking during the mornings in our japa retreat or not necessarily. Somehow everything has the absolute as the center, so it's always interconnected, so it can never be totally out of the loop, if you will. So I don't know, are there any questions, something you'd like to ask here about? So Mati,
you mentioned the other day that there are different levels of bhakti, and that there were corresponding levels of chanting japa.
Okay.
So I was wondering if you could.
I don't remember having said that, but it's okay. It's okay. It's a legal idea, no problem. There are levels of bhakti, of course. Yeah, I mean, basically, sorry?
Maybe it was just different levels of practice of bhakti. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember either, but.
Different stages of bhakti.
So, which will be the question?
If you could speak about the different stages of bhakti and the corresponding stages of chanting.
Oh, I see. Okay, so I've briefly replied to that, but that can take. We should do a study of the whole Madhurya Kadambini. Lala Chandra already did that very comprehensively. So he already got stole that mercy for himself, and so I cannot take that back for me. So. But basically, the idea is just the point that I wanted to make is that there are stages, no? That is like a crown. Rupa Goswami uses the word crown. Mm-hmm. Crown means like step by step or sequence. No? In Upadhyaya Samhita, he uses it more than once, like two times at least, to make this point. Like, again, this is not something that yesterday you were. Sometimes we can see if you were a karmi and now you are a redeemed bhakta. Or something like that. No? But there are some stages in between. Like everything in life. I mean, there are stages. Everything is developmental, if you will. So my main point was that. No? Like, don't try to conceive the spiritual journey as a one-shot injection or whatever. No? And I received the magical formula and I'm there or something. It's a process. You may have received everything on day one, but to take advantage of all that came in day one may take a lifetime. No? And after a lifetime, you start to realize, oh, that thing that I received on day one, wow, that was it. And you won't be so sure either, no? Because at that stage you will open to, maybe it's more than that even. No? So of course there are stages in bhakti and different acharyas have presented them in different ways. Of course, the most well-known one is the 9-stage sequence that Srila Rupa Goswami presents and that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further unfolds in Madhurya Kadambini. Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajani Kriya, Nartani Vritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prem. Which is again a way of describing the whole thing in 9 stages. It's not that only there are 9 stages. No, it's not like you go to a flat and you have 9 floors. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 9 prem. Okay, they are in between stages. Sometimes the elevator might get stuck in between two floors, and there's another stage. and it may go down. What's going on? So even Vishwanath Chakravarti, when he explains the nine stages, he won't say there's only one variety of each one of these stages, but there are nuanced two types of ruchi, and like this. Now each stages will be subdivided when he goes to prem. Okay, let's now speak about nine developments of prem. No, sneha, man, pranay, raga, nurag, bhav. No, sorry, I'm missing one. Sneha, man, pranay. Rag, Anurag, Bhav, Mahabhav. Seven. So, and in Mahabhav you have further development. So the point is, there's a lot of ground to cover. So don't be in a rush. Don't be anxious about it. We should not. And the natural idea that is immediately is the sense, what you are doing in day one, as we always make this point, what we are doing in day one, that's what we are, maybe not day one, maybe day two or three, but whatever. Those things that we receive, even in the beginning of bhakti, in one sense are those things that will be accompanying us in perfection. In day one you are chanting, in eternity you are chanting. In day one you have sadhu sangha, in eternity there is sadhu sangha. So my point is, of course, between one and the other, there will be a difference. Not necessarily because of the quality on the other side, but on the quality how you are embracing those things. But from day one, all the elements will be there. Sadhu Sangha, Nam Kirtan, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Bhas, Srimurti, in some way or another. No? At least you will become aware of them, and gradually they will become more comprehensive presence in your life. So, but with this I'm making the point, even though that what you will be doing in all the stages will be the same externally, in one sense, there may be some details, but generally, mostly, we will see devotees in Shraddha, Sadhu Sanghanatha, they will be still chanting, still saying the Bhagavatam, and still worshipping Srimurti, still having Sadhu Sangha, actually doing that even more and more and more internally. Externally, also maybe more in quantity, but especially internally, more in quality, linking with that. So my point is, if those things are there from day one till eternity, it's of course natural to think of them. Okay, but all of them, all of these practices, one of them being chanting, but everything else will take a different shade or face according to each stage, because you are actually getting closer to them, if you will, the more you advance. You're realizing what they actually are. You are getting closer to this idea of, oh, again, Nam is not different from Bhagavan. Oh, Bhagavat is not different from Bhagavan. Oh, Srimurti is not different from Bhagavan. Oh my God, I'm thrown into a pool of absolutes. All these practices are more than what I thought on day one, again, and I'm realizing it now. So, but that was the point. On one side, externally it will be always the same, mostly, but internally it shouldn't. So that's one point. Second point again, there will be stages, although externally it's the same, internally it shouldn't, and it shouldn't because there are stages and you have to go through those stages to discover a new phase of all those things. And what comes to mind also, apart from the clear sequence described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in Madhurya Kadamini, is what Mahaprabhu gives very interestingly in the Sri Shikshastakam, which is basically that. And he's describing eight verses which correspond with the nine stages of bhakti. And that was an insight shared by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Before Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his Sammodana Bhashyam, his commentary on Sri Shikshastakam, nobody conceived of the Shikshastakam verses as representing each of the stages, and he'd say many other things as well. He mentioned that in the first verse, seven glories of the name are mentioned, and the remaining seven verses of Shikshastakam explain each of those, because all of them are also corresponding with different stages, and he explained each of the verses in connection to the Ashtakaliya Lila, also the eight periods of the eternal day in his Bhajan Rahasya, and many interesting contributions. But one of them is the eight verses speak about the nine stages. First verse speaks about Shraddha and Sadhu Sangha. second verse about anartha nibriti and bhajana kriya, third verse about nishta, fourth verse about ruchi, sixth verse about asakti. I skip one verse. Sixth verse, right? Fourth verse about ruchi, fifth verse about asakti, sixth verse about bhava, and eighth about prem. Seven vipralamba prem, and eight sambhog prem. Of course, we already did some detailed study of that some years ago. You can go there for more, but he's basically saying this, and in this one of his verses, basically Sikshastakam revolves around chanting. So Guru Maharaj explaining his incredible commentary on Sikshastakam. He's trying to make this point. No? Each one of the verses is all revolving around Srinam, because the Sikshastakam begins with this invitation, Param Jayati Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. No? Supreme glory, all great, supreme victory to Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. And then comes the unfolding of what's the implication of that. So then comes second verse, when Mahaprabhu, what we say, is mentioning, showing appreciation for the name. Beginning verse is sadhu sangha and shraddha. Shraddha in the sense of supreme glory to the holy name. That shows some faith. Now you have some faith about the supremacy of the name. And when you say sankirtanam, remember, sankirtan means sangha kirtan. So that speaks about, you start to realize the importance of sadhu sangha. And then the second verse will have to do with anartha nivritti, bhajana kriya and anartha nivritti, where you are practicing, you are appreciating the grace of the name, so many names, so much shakti, no hard fast rules, but anartha nivritti. Durdaiva medrishami hajjani nanura. But I don't have attraction for that because of anarthas. Anarthas means, durdaiva means I'm unfortunate, and anartha means false sense of wealth, which is another way of saying unfortunate. Unfortunate, no fortune. Even worse, because you think you have fortune, but it's just like counterfeit money. No. Anartha, artha means wealth. Dharma artha, kamma artha. Anartha means you think it's wealth, you think you have something value, you will obtain so much through that, but you will go to jail if you try to get something with that counterfeit stuff. Well, like if you have 1 million counterfeit dollars, but you don't know it's counterfeit, or even worse, you know, and you try to, but you don't know probably, and you're okay, I will buy a house and a car and go to Bonacaste. Maybe Krishna may make an arrangement in that case. Yogamaya will cover the people. But if not, you will go with 100, 1 million counterfeit dollars. They will say, this counterfeit, they call the police and you're in jail. And you're like, oh my God, what happened? 5 minutes ago, you have so many hopes and all, and now I'm in jail. So that's because of anartha. So Mahaprabhu is representing us by saying, anarthas again are like the holes in the container. So much mercy is in the name, three lines of appreciation of that, but the mercy is leaking through the holes, and I'm like, where is the mercy? What's going on? So somehow that could be the spirit of chanting in those stages. Now, proper acknowledgement, proper appreciation of the name, but of the glories and so on, but still, I don't have the attraction I know it's possible to have, and I acknowledge why. I engage in a very thorough, comprehensive exploration of why I'm not attracted to the name. It cannot be the name failing. Again, we cannot doubt the absolute. Be careful of having that filter thing lingering. No. So why then? So having that integrity, that's all part of the life of a sadhaka in that stage while chanting. And of course, next stage will be third verse, nishta. Nishta means firmness, you say? Yeah. Steadiness. Kirtaniya sadahari, third verse, which implies constantly engaging in chanting. But constantly engaging in chanting is not just like you are all day, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and nishta. I've chanted tomorrow, I will chant one lakh. I insisted for one day, for tomorrow. It's not like that. You have to be nista with other things as well, like sunichi, nasaishnu, amani, manadina. When you have nista with those while chanting, that's real. Nishtita, bhajan, kirtan. Humility, tolerance, respect, love for anonymity, you say? Not caring for a spotlight on your head. So you have to have nishta, steadiness in those virtues accompanying your chanting. Again, it's a lifestyle to accompany our chanting. It's not just chanting. Chanting is not an isolated function in our daily schedule. So now I chant and I do so nicely, everything. End of the chanting and I'm a totally different person or something like that. So let's say Maharaj will say, in the beginning of practice that can happen. We may not be able yet to connect the dots. And he will say, Kanishta Bhakta will go to the temple, and in the temple will be like, Jai Doji Gopal, and it seems like you're melting in front of the deity, and you're like, oh, Jai. And I'm not making a show, but somehow you feel down something, but you cross the boundaries, the Tathastha line from the temple, outside of the temple, and you are a totally different person. You start to do ordinary things and behave like you've never been in the temple. Well, to speak 5 minutes ago. So still there is this like dichotomy, like, but you were in a temple and you were behaving like that and to behave. So was that a performance? Or was that out of mere social custom? And what's going on outside? What's going on inside? Who are you of the two? And you may like, I'm the two. It's possible? No, it's not possible. You have to integrate. So gradually you start to understand, oh, okay, the temple is not the temple only. I should be able to live as if in the temple always, everywhere. So going to the temple helps me to realize that. And so I conduct, when I leave the temple, conduct in such a way that I don't leave the temple. I'm carrying the temple with me, inside of me. And my house is an ashram. That's the idea. It's not just that ashram is shelter. So here is an ashram, but hopefully you have a good dose and injection of ashram experience. So you go back home and you go back ashram, not back home. That's all how you see your place. If you see your place as my place, my house, when I can do what I want, nobody will know, in the temple, and it's my place for my pleasure garden or whatever idea. I mean, you yourself are creating a hole in the ashram, in the container there. But if you treat your home as your ashram, that changes the whole thing. As if you treat your wife as a Vaishnavi, that's one thing. If you, or your husband, or whoever, if you choose to see them in ordinary terms, that will change the whole picture. So it's all about which lens you want to put when dealing with others' house and so on. So, sorry, I don't want to go sidetracked, just going back to the point, but it's a whole lifestyle, that's my point. So the third verse is very interesting because saying that, okay, you want to chant always, but that means the always you will conduct yourself in your life with these values and virtues as well. Because if not, that constant chanting may be even an evasive mechanism to not be humble, tolerant, respectful, and so on. So that's nishta. And chanting in nishta, again, chanting in this different stages is not only what happens when I sit to chant in that stage, but what happens during my whole day in that stage, basically, which are the symptoms of that stage, each stage, and that applies to chanting, and that applies to everything else, and so on. Now then will come ruchi, that's Mahaprabhu say, that's in somehow the dawning of pure devotion, no selfish desire, basically one is even not interested in samsara, and transcending samsara, which means I'm not interested in samsara. No? I mean, because many people is not interested in transcending samsara because they're interested in samsara. But in ruchi, you are not interested in transcending, in even transcending samsara, because you are interested in what's happening beyond samsara, beyond transcending samsara. No? And you have so much ruchi. Ruchi means taste for bhakti. No? So your chitta, you're unconscious of, but has been so much cleansed and spiritualized by spiritual samskars that there are no more like material impressions, material desires sprouting, and whatever comes from bhakti, you have, oh, you can perceive all that without the filter of material contamination. So you have such a taste for that, that anything else have any taste whatsoever. Really, you don't need to force anything. It's just like, wow, how the sea level of the name is more valuable than all the universes put together with their proposals and so on. So that will be the chanting in Nisht and Ruchi. Try to imagine. No? Just a little bit more on the other side of the hill. Still, we may be going on the upward, is it? Journey. As Guru Mahasaya, my Guru Mahasaya likes to say, this journey is upward till you reach Nishta. Nishta is the top of the hill, and then you get to see what's on the other side of the hill. Now, before, you are just trusting your mountain guide. Now, like, on the other side of the hill, there is a very beautiful valley, but you don't see anything. And you have to go upward, long journey. Upward. So you are like, hey, I trust you. And he's showing you pictures of the valley. I've been there and coming from there back and forth. I brought people there. So you choose to trust me or not. So we are trusting upward, upward, upward. Oh my God, it's getting long. Upward, no problem. You get to Nishta, and it means you get a glimpse of the other side by constant practice. Again, the practice in Nishta is so determined and steady that it suffocates all different material tsar that may be still lingering there. So they don't have a chance to sprout. So they don't render any further opposition, if you will. So there's not filtering, and you can see, oh, what's my ultimate prospect? So my Guru Mahasaya will say, you get to the top of the mountain, that's Nishta. And you see the valley of friend, the valley of love of God down the mountain, down the hill. So now the rest of the journey from Nishta to Prem will be downhill, not uphill. Uphill, you say? So downhill is a little bit quicker. You will have more speed. Still, you have to do the journey. You cannot just jump from the hill and reach the valley. You do the work. It may take time, maybe a little bit for moments, but it's downward. So that will happen in Ruchi, you know. So much taste will be there in chanting and in performing any devotional function. And then Asakti, you know, which Guru Mahārāja will say, in Ruchi you are attached to the practice of bhakti, to chanting and all the angas of bhakti, you are attached to that. As you are attached, as Guru Mahārāja will say the other day, you know, he quoted this prayer from Jiva Goswami, oh Bhagavan, as a young boy becomes naturally, spontaneously attracted to a girl, and vice versa, let my mind be in that same way attracted, irresistibly to you. So that in Ruchi happens towards all the limbs of bhakti, irresistibly attracted to chanting. Again, it's not that you are struggling to finish. You are struggling to wake up and do something else, you know, as Guru Mahārāja will say. You know, it's difficult to stop. You have so much taste, you cannot stop. Imagine it's like if you can have ice cream for eternity. That's joking. No? I don't want to reduce the glory of Harinam to ice cream. No? Ice cream prasad, for sure. It's still not the same, but if you have an eternal stomach for ice cream, you may just like, no, I constantly have a taste for that. Of course, it's not a proper example, because I'm sure if you eat 10 kilos of ice cream at one point, you say, I don't want more of that. Please stop there. This is famous verse in the Bhagavata. Bhakti parishanu bhav viraktir anjatra chaisatrai kaikya kala prapadi manasya jatasmatasyus tushti pushti kshuda payonu gasham. Another way of speaking in sequence, he says, the Bhagavatam 11th canto saying, there are three stages, bhakti parishanu bhav viraktir, too, like a thermometer to prove your progress. Devotion will increase, realization about God will increase, and detachment from all that is not that will increase. All of three simultaneously. Attraction for the practice, attraction for the object of the practice, and detachment from whatever is not that, if you will. And it gives the example, tushti pushti kshuda payonu gasham. It's like if a hungry person starts to eat, and three things will occur simultaneously. Tushti pushti kshudapayo anugasham. With each and every morsel, the person will experience satisfaction. This is tasty. Pushti, like nutrition, like strength. Oh, Buddhist karmic energy. And chud apayo, which means eradication of hunger. The three come at the same time. No? It's tasty, it's nourishing, it cancels hunger, if you will. So in the same way, by proper engagement in bhakti, devotion comes, like some taste for that, some strength comes, and detachment from whatever is unfavorable for that. So all the things, again, in ruchi you have a taste for bhakti. And in asakti, the next stage, you have an attachment, not for the practice of bhakti only as it's in ruchi, but now for the object of the practice of bhakti, Krishna. And not just Krishna, generic Krishna, but a specific, unique type of Krishna corresponding with your dawning spiritual identity. In asakti, you will have a glimpse of that. Because, as Guru Maharaj likes to say, our material identity depends on our attachments. You have certain attachments, and that's who you are. You define yourself according to your attachments in conditioned state. So we could say the same applies to spiritual identity. You will be defined according to your spiritual attachments. So, anasakti is attachment proper. The word means attachment. So that's a stage of spiritual attachment, which means spiritual identity will start to manifest clearly. Before that, you may feel, I may have some taste and some even affinity in one direction or the other, but in asakti you actually see who you are in that particular identity, starts to come. And then you graduate from sadhana. And again, all these have to do with the chanting. You know? You are chanting from that perspective, from that sense of identity, from that sense of self, and so on. With that attachment for the particular form of your istadev, if you will, in which you want to serve for eternity. And then you graduate from sadhana and you go to bhava and prem. So in bhava, there is another sadhana called bhava sadhana. You have to start to practice by nourishing all the ingredients that will conform your eternal, your siddhadeha, your eternal identity. You know, on that stage, of course, certain guidance may be required and some other things. And of course, the natural revelation will be in themselves quite clear about where to go, what to do. And bhava means, as you know, emotion, or means, in this case, ecstasy. So you may imagine, how is the chanting at that stage? Well, pretty ecstatic, to say the least. No? I mean, again, if you study what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says in Madhurya Kadambini, sorry to go to that work over and over again, but that's the work in that sense. As you have mentioned, what is chanting in bhava, and he'll have spurtis of Krishna, and Krishna will reveal to each one of his senses. He will perceive the aroma of Krishna, and the sense of smell will collapse. He will perceive with the touch of Krishna, and the sense of touch will collapse. He will have a spurti darshan of Krishna, and say some sight with collapse. So he will like coming back and forth. As I say the other day, those will be your rounds on that stage. No? So don't ask a bhava bhakta, how many rounds? Did you finish your round today? No? No? That's not the place to ask. They finished their whole sadhana stage. So they are graduated from sadhana. So they are in another world altogether. No? Bhava is the dawning of prem. In prema, what is Sudha Sattva Visheshadma Prema Suryam Susamya? But it's the first rays of the sun of prem. Here comes the sun. Your horizon say that. No? Here comes the sun. So we can say, of course, I'm not saying that the song is about bhava bhakti, but we can use the title for a moment. No, bhava is announcing, here comes the sun. The sun is prem, and of course, you can imagine what prem is coming. If bhava was ecstatic and all the things were happening in bhava, prem is a condensation of that. So how that will take place? And of course, it's so intense that Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said, you will need another body right beginning from the Leela, being born in the womb of the Gopi and receiving Bhakti Samskar from Nitya Parishads Ragatmika Brajavasis, so you can deal with the intensity of the developments of Prem that come after Prem. So at that point, you need another birth, something like that, because it's too much what will be coming through your chanting, through whatever you will be doing. And we see that in the life of these great personalities. They practice, but as we say today, no, you will be passing from one emotion to another. You will be carried away transcendentally into a sea of, an ocean of Pratipadam Purnam Britta Swadanam Sarvatma Snapanam Mahaprabhu saying regarding those higher stages. At every step you will be relishing the nectar of immortality. And Sarvatma Snapanam, your whole being will be bathed by that experience. That's a real immersion. We are trying to be immersed here, but real immersion forever, that's Bhavan Prem. So again, we could say the symptoms that characterize those stages basically are the ones that will be experienced through chanting. Now, it's not that there's some separate way of describing the chanting in each stage, which is somehow different from what has already been said about what's going on in each stage. Because again, the chanting and the rest of the day is one and the same thing. No, the idea is that whatever we experience is hopefully, again, not only while chanting or not only while not chanting, but it's like a stream, gradually becomes more established. It's not that, oh, I only chant, and only when I chant, I feel something nice. The rest of the day is crap in my devotional life. No. And hopefully not the opposite either. Oh, when I chant, it's crap. But when I stop chanting, oh my gosh, so much joy and relief is coming because of stop chanting. Oh my, please no, don't do that to Srinam. Anyhow, some thoughts. I extended myself a little bit, but for more, Lal Chandra is still waiting for us there with Madhurya Kadambini and so many other ways also waiting there. Something else? Any other question, topic? Sure.
In different parts of your lectures, you talked about how Bhaktirasa is full, but always expanding. And that expansion through new, specific, unique services.
You have some insect nearby. Wait 1 minute, they will assist you. They are covering your back.
Yeah.
So always expanding, and?
And that expansion is facilitated through new, specific, unique services. And so I'm kind of thinking of the two sides of the coin. The devotee has a desire to render a specific service, and Krishna has a desire to receive a specific service.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if one of those comes first, if one leads the way, or if the mutual differs for each circumstance.
Yeah, I get the point. Do you follow the question? Yeah. So basically saying, at one point of our practice, we may have a desire of offering some specific service to Krishna, and maybe from the beginning, but probably in a more deep, comprehensive way that will come in time. In the beginning, we may be just be told what to do, if you will. But eventually that will mature into our own, again, individuality coming to the fore by the influence of bhakti and inspiring us in a certain way. So maybe the question is, okay, that means that you want to offer some service to Krishna and Krishna will accept that, or that means that to begin with Krishna wanted to receive that service from you and that's why you are inspired to offer that. Something like that? Something else?
Or just like which one is pushing it?
Which one is pushing it?
Which one's pushing it forward first?
Yeah, I see. Well, of course, there are ways to speak about that. As we say these days, we could say that to begin with. Again, there are ways of speaking about that. For example, I'm going again to Madhurya Kadambini for a minute. So we could say, okay, Krishna is calling first, and that's why we are trying to call him now. No, you can take that stance. No, like we are chanting not because it was in our original plan. Okay, I will dedicate my life as a devotee. That was not in my agenda, at least a few decades ago. But it was in someone else's agenda. So we could say it was in Krishna's agenda. Of course, if we get more specific, we could say, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Krishna has delegated his Kripa Shakti, his mercy giving potency to his devotees, and they have their own will, if you will. So Bhakti Shakti or Bhakti Devi, we could conceive of Bhakti in personified terms, as we do as personalistic people. So Bhakti Devi has her own volition, if you will, and expresses itself through the medium of her agents, if you will, the Vaishnavas, no? Because and that has a lot to do with bhakti coming into our life. That's the point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is making there, that okay, you may have your will, and you may have never have chosen bhakti for yourself, but the Vaishnavas have their own will, so their will meets yours. And maybe you were not thinking about that, but the will comes with certain, how do you say in English?
Potency?
Yeah, oh, potency and certain, like, I'm trying to find one word, but it's not coming up. Let me see. A certain, I'm not finding that.
Invitation?
Impression?
Like impronta, I'm thinking.
Impronta?
No, that's something else. Okay, it's kind of certain, let's say certain intention and certain particular way of expressing itself. Mm-hmm. And again, you may not be thinking about that, but it just crossed your will and like, okay, I'm there. So, because the question is, okay, what's first? But if we agree that in the beginning we may not have a clear idea, I want to offer this service to Krishna. So at one point I may have that desire, but it's first my desire. Krishna wants that way. We could say, before you having that desire, you met the sadhus who, through their will, engaged you in bhakti, and eventually you have a desire because of being engaged in bhakti, because of having crossed the will of the sadhus. So in that sense, you can say first is their will. It all begins. Krishna Bhakti Janma Molhai Sadhu Sangha, says Krishna Das Kailash Goswami. The root cause that gives birth to bhakti is Sadhu Sangha. So if you want to go into that, if you will, initial moment, we could put the initiative, if you will, on that side, the kickstart on Bhakti Devi's agency. And of course, that came to us, we somehow accepted that, embraced that, and okay, we have our own will expressing itself in the context of bhakti now. But again, even if we have some desire to do something at a certain stage, we can go back to the beginning of that, and that's always the initiative comes from, prerogative comes from bhakti. So if you want, you can make that point. And by that initial impulse, injected, if you will, in sadhu sangha bhakti, of course our will become informed by bhakti samskaras, and it will express itself in the form of, I like to offer these and that services in particular, and in a legal way, of course, because of course sometimes our desire to offer a service may be still mixed with some whatever. I would like to make a rock band that makes only Nirvana songs, but all with Maha Mantra. So I want to offer that to Joji Gopal. Okay, but still there's some mixture there. You follow the point, no? So, but we could say that when some devotional inspiration comes and through which you want to offer yourself through that particular action, in a selfless way, again, that's your will being informed and inspired by Swarup Shakti, who came on its own will initially. But then it's you expressing that. And of course, Krishna, if that's coming from a legal place, if you will, of course, Krishna is, forced in a natural way, forced by attraction of love to, He himself has the desire to receive that. When he becomes thirsty for that desire you have, that's how it works. If it's again pure desire, because he's not touched by making a nirvana band with Mahamantra. No, that won't reach Golok. Sorry for that. I say that because I've seen one video of one devotee once. They were singing all one album of Nirvana, and all the songs were Hare Krishna, but with the melodies, and they're like, I said, I don't think that fully divinely inspired, with all respect. No? I wouldn't call that Yukta Vairagya. Anyhow. Okay, I appreciate you're trying to dovetail your anartas and your musical rajasic tendencies with something in connection with, but don't cheat yourself thinking this is the same as something japa or whatever, no? So my point is, that's how it works, no? In the beginning, of course, initial impetus from bhakti, you take that impetus and makes the form, purifies your will, and eventually you may, some wish, desires will come. That's the idea. That's an important point because, of course, sometimes, unfortunately, I've seen some devotees thinking that there's no place for that. No? There's no place for desiring to offer a service to Krishna, and that's selfish or that's your own concoction, and not necessarily. I mean, it can be, but not necessarily. I remember in this book, interesting one from Purnachandra Goswami, Unspoken Obstacles in the Path of Bhakti, interesting one. And he was mentioned that he was speaking, he said Prabhupada disciple, he left his body already, and he was speaking about talking to others, to other devotees, and he will ask, so what service you would like to offer to Krishna? And the devotee will, this particular devotee will cry. And he said, why are you crying? Because nobody in my life asked me that. I was never offered the chance of expressing my will in accordance to Krishna. And so on. So the point is, there is place for that, and when you have that desire, Krishna will be forced to accept that. By he wants that. Like Yashoda has, I mean, of course, another example, Nitya-siddha, but Yashoda has this, as we have been sharing, this like burning vatsalya prem, this extreme desire to feed Krishna, take care of Krishna, I mean, do all the things that the mother of all mothers will do. She has so much desire to offer that. He won't think in terms of service to God, but she's offering herself for his pleasure. So she has so much that desire that Krishna is bound to reciprocate with that. He becomes totally obsessed, if you want to put it like that, with accepting that from her and reciprocating. So the will of the devotee, Bhagavan follows the will of the devotee, if you want to put it like that, in that case. That's what Vishwanath says in Madhura Kadambini. It's not that wherever Krishna goes, bhakti has to go. He will say, wherever bhakti goes, Krishna has to go. He wants. He's happy to just me. Radhikar Prima Guru Amisis Janatan. I'm dancing puppet in this school of Prem of Sri Radha. I'm in her. Wherever she goes, I go. However she dances, I dance. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, he describes the devotees, Nirapeksham Munisham Tam Nibai Ram Samadarshanam Anubra Jami Ham Nityam Puja Yetyam Rirenu Bihi. He says, my devotees are free from all selfish desire, they are peaceful, they are very sober, they see everyone equally. And then he said, Anubra Jami Aham Nityam, I perpetually follow in their footsteps, Puja Yetyam Rirenu Bihi, hoping to be bathed by the dust of their feet. That's Krishna speaking. That's his own mode in regarding to when he sees devotees like the Vrajavasis offering them, wanting to offer themselves in certain way to him, and Krishna is feeling like, my aspiration is to perpetually follow them and be bathed in their foot dust. Like if I'm a servant of them. I just live to reciprocate, to satisfy their demands. I'm just living to make their wish come true, become true, basically. That's what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita. No? I can't recall. Krishna Satyakari Vritya Bancha, something. The only business that Krishna has is to fulfill the desires of his devotees. He has no other business. He lives for that. And he's, of course, happy to do so. So we can conceive it in that way. In one sense, we could say devotees taking, Bhakti is taking the initiative before you are not a devotee. And then you are a devotee, so Bhakti is taking the initiative through you as a devotee. It's always Bhakti taking, if you will, the lead and Krishna following. That's our unique conception. No? It's not Krishna taking the lead. No? It's Bhakti taking the lead, Radha taking the lead. Krishna's following, so Krishna's worshipping. No, as we always say, it's not about God here, it's about love for God and love, which is what God Himself worships. Love is the prayojan, the goal of life for us, and love is the prayojan for Krishna. He has prem for his devotee, but prem can always be attained in a higher way. It always remains further goal to attain. So that's an interesting idea. Prem is such a comprehensive goal of life that is even the goal of life for God, not only for ourselves. So that's the power of bhakti again. God Himself say, "I want that. That's my goal." I will say, "Oh, that's my goal." Well, that's the goal of everyone. That's the goal then. If that's the goal for everyone without exception, including God, that's the goal of life. And Krishna will say, "Yes, yes, that's the goal of life for me. That's what makes Him appear as Mahaprabhu." He wants to go further into his exploration of prem. It's not enough what I'm experiencing as Krishna. Let's try it from this vantage point. Still trying to go deeper into his own goal. So we could say that there's a way to... However we may take it, we will always be biased towards bhakti. Maybe ki chai. Okay. Something else? Some last question? Sorry for conditioning your last question.
So I was looking at the Panchatattvaatmakam Krishna verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the thing that I was always confused about is that it says that Mahaprabhu comes as a form of a devotee, and then Advaita Acharya comes as an incarnation of a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see what was the difference? Like what are they trying to delineate there?
Okay. So he's mentioning this famous verse one morning. Pranam is offered to Panchatattva, Panchatattvan Makam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Sarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. That's the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's the last verse of the Mangalacharan. So there are the five features of Panchatattva mentioned with some defining quality. Panchatattva Atmakam. So Pranam to Panchatattva, composed of these five truths. Makam Krishnam, Bhakta Rupa, Sarupakam, Bhakta Avataram, Bhaktakyam, Namami, Bhakta Shaktikam. So, of course, a detailed exploration of that, my Guru Master wrote a whole book about that called Sacred Preface. But in brief, regarding to your question, I think what you say, you find some little, not contradiction, but confusion about mostly these two, incarnation of a devotee. In the form of a devotee, Bhakta Rupa, Bhakta Avatar.
Yeah, it sounds like the same.
Yeah, it sounds. In one sense, of course, all of them are the same, but they are different. But are the same, but they are different. No? Unity and diversity, Veda Ved. Because there are five Pancha Tattva, means five truths, literally, or five aspects of reality, of high supreme reality. It's the absolute in five features, the absolute. And his shaktis, and his expansions, and his divine descent. So as we know, Mahaprabhu represents Bhagavan himself, the Godhead, the source of everything else. Then Nityananda Prabhu is Balaram. We already spoke Baladepunim about the principle of Prakash, and Vaibhav Prakash, and Prabhav Prakash. The expansion, the first expansion, to begin with in the spiritual domain. Like Baladev in Braj, it's the other self of Krishna in the breath, in the spiritual world, and further expanding in by Dwarka, in Mathura, in by Kumsa, and so on. So that's connected with Nityananda. And then comes maybe the point to clarify, Bhakta Avataram, Advaita Acharya. So incarnation, sometimes the word incarnation is used. I personally prefer not to use that because incarnation may convey the notion of incarne, flesh. Carne means flesh. So like entering flesh. But actually for us, this is not the idea of avatar. Avatar, actually the very word avatar means from up, avatara, crossing tara, from up to down. Like implying that divine descent is up, comes down, crossing, but not being touched by the down, not being in flesh. No problem if you want to use the word incarnation, but specifically, it's not conveying what's actually taking place with the avatar. So avatar has to do with, of course, Mahaprabhu is Bhakta Rupa, he's God in the form of a devotee, but also he's known as Bhakta Avatar, Gaur Avatar. Yeah. So there may be some overlapping there. Of course, technically speaking, Mahaprabhu is Avatari. Avatari means the source of all avatars. But he's called Avatar because Avatar also refers to divine descent, to the principle of the absolute coming into this world. So in that sense, you could say Mahaprabhu is descending, Nityananda is descending. Every member of the Panchatattva and more are divine descents, if you want to call it like that. But Bhakta Avatar or Avatar per se is tied to Advaita in this case, because Advaita Acharya is connected, the identity of Advaita Acharya is connected with Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu is that aspect of the Godhead, and again, it may sound a little bit complex with the ones I'm familiar with, all these terminologies and names and so on, so bear with me. But it is said in Shastra that through Mahavishnu is that aspect of the divine that mostly through which all the Srishti Lila is unfolding, all the creational experience is coming, all this, the realm of Maya Shakti and Jiva Shakti in connection to Maya Shakti, all this is unfolding from Mahavishnu. So since avatar means a descent from the spiritual world to here, and Mahavishnu is the deity, if you want to put it like that, that is administrating the material creation from which the jivas are coming without beginning, and so on. All the avatars that come into this world somehow do so through the agency of Mahavishnu, because Mahavishnu is like, how do you say, monitoring the material creation. So something from transcendence comes to material creation without being touched by it. Somehow it's to say that it's going through the, I don't want to say the customs of Mahavishnu. But the point made is Mahavishnu is administering this section, this aspect of the Godhead is dealing with this section. So whatever comes into this section somehow is doing so in the connection with the deity who is presiding over that, which is Mahavishnu. So in that sense, since Advaita Acharya is Mahavishnu, he's connected with Avatar, because not only because Advaita himself, we could say he's descending from up to down from Nityananda here, but because he's being Mahavishnu, and through Mahavishnu all the avatars are coming. In that sense, the principle of avatar is connected to him, as a member of the Panchatattva only, mainly to him. Again, it doesn't mean that all the others are not coming from up to down. They are coming also. But Advaita is Mahavishnu, and Mahavishnu is, again, presiding deity of material creation, and through his agency all these divine descents are coming. So all avatars arrive here to Mahavishnu. So that's why he is mostly connected with the principle of, again, avatar. And again, of course, the remaining ones are Gadadhar Pandit, connected with Swarup Shakti, Bhakti Shakti, she's Radha herself in Gaur Lila. A lot to say about that. And Sri Vas Pandit is represent the principle of Tatastha Shakti, imbued with bhakti, no? The perfection of Jiva Shakti in connection to devotion. So, brief words about Panchatattva and that particular mantra. For more information, I sent Sumati to read Madhurya Kadambini and I sent Akshay to read Sacred Breakfast. There's always some homework to do, apart from the one already given in the retreat, everyone. It's the evening homework. So, okay. Sumati, two burning questions of the question? The question can be quick. Let's see.
I was reading in the 10th canto the other night about the birth of Krishna.
Mm.
And in chapter 1 of the 10th canto, verse 63, it says that Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men and their wives were denizens of the heavenly planets.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that all of Krishna's, like Nanda Maharaj and the Devasis were all eternal residents of the spiritual world.
So that's a short question, right? Again, the quick questions are the ones who demand the longest answer. So we'll leave it that for tomorrow.
Okay.
Because tomorrow we have Q&A and tomorrow will be the day before Janmashtami. So that will be more appropriate to continue building up to that, because it may take some time. But you start tomorrow. When I say any question, you raise your hand quickly and remind me about that. So we'll stop here. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda ki jai, Gaur Namanda.